Hello, hello, hello. We are back, the Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast, number 22.
22 is a good number.
Yes, it is. And this week, we're calling it Over the Hump. Because you know why? Because it is the middle of August. We have probably survived the worst of the summer. And things are starting to feel a little different in the air. It's getting darker a little bit sooner. Starting to see different companies putting out their fall and winter gear. So
we even saw ski trailers last week. So we're seeing the snow at the on the horizon.
At the end of the tunnel.
Snow at the end of the tunnel. That's right.
Yes. So again, this week, Brian, your host. That's me.
And Mario, I'm here.
What's up, Mario?
Not much other than we got a little weekly flavor to go through.
Well, before we do that, let's just go over the stats. SkiBumPodcast.com. Find us there. Subscribe on iTunes. Please rate us. Tell us you love us. We like that kind of stuff. We have egos. We're very sensitive. Facebook/SkiBumPodcast. Twitter @SkiBumPodcast. Or email us, SkiBumPodcast@gmail.com. All right. Weekly flavor. What do you got?
So my weekly flavor this week, I have a Sierra Nevada Quilla. Or Quilla, I don't know how you say it, but it looks like Quilla. It's a Belgian-style Abbey Saison. So it's got a nice flavor to it, 7.5%. So this is a pretty potent one.
Strong. But, an Abbey Saison, huh?
Yeah, it tastes like a normal Saison, but actually has a little bit of a, I don't know, orangey and peppery kind of flavor to it. Says they made it with fresh mandarin oranges. So.
Oh. The mandarin makes it good.
The mandarin.
Yeah, and I am drinking a Magic Hat Stealing Time, which is a summer wheat.
A wheat.
It is a wheat ale brewed with ginger.
So the bottles were actually kind of cool. So the Quilla had a cork in the top. So that was kind of like opening a champagne bottle. And this one, I love the label because it reminds me of Liechtenstein.
It's pretty groovy. It has that awesome kind of old school typography too on there.
Mm.
That old world. That look to it, and yeah, the label's great because it's got the edges to it, like torn paper. And the picture of, I guess, it's a monk on there because it's an Abbey ale. It looks almost like from Lord of the Rings, Aragorn. Like he's kind of like he's a monk, but he's probably a badass too.
Yeah,
you know,
like a ninja monk.
You're not gonna mess with him.
Yeah,
he's gonna whoop your ass.
Whooping that ass.
Yes.
But yeah, that's what it reminds me of Liechtenstein. I like that.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. We got the dots.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So we got some ski news for y'all this week. This is just reported. This actually came out today. This is from Curbed, ski.curbed.com. There is a 90% chance we are getting a strong El Nino.
What is an El Nino?
It's Spanish for the Nino.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way.
Out of the way. Cleared that up.
That's a boy. Nino is the boy, Nina is a girl. So
what does that mean? So is the boy worse than the girl?
I think the way they have these rated, I think the boy, because they do have La Nina forecast.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one of those a few weeks back, and I think it's a little milder than the El Nino.
Okay, that's good.
So the boy's more terrible than the girl.
I like it. So they're saying the weather experts have spoken. The winter is going to have a strong El Nino. In fact, according to the forecast released Thursday, there's a 90% chance that El Nino will persist through the winter, even rivaling the strong events of 72 to 73, 82 to 83, and 97 to 98. More to the point for skiers and riders is how snowfall fared during those strong El Nino winters. In his end-of-the-season take after the 97-98 season, Tony Crocker of BestSnow.net compared El Nino to flipping a biased coin. All the randomness of weather is still there, but the chances of certain events are increased. So it goes on a little bit, and it talks about, you know, the different weather and how it tracked all over the North American resorts in that 97-98 El Nino season. So Mammoth had 156% of normal snowfall. Most other places was pretty, you know, it ranged from 90 to 115%. Except Sugarloaf in Maine, 146% normal.
Wow.
So it seems like California and, I guess, the Northeast had the best effects from the last El Nino. So I guess all we can really do now is keep our fingers crossed and hope that happens again this year.
Cool.
Yeah.
If what's happening in South America is any indication, they're getting pounded.
Oh, every week. I mean, last week we were talking about Australia. They got like 4 feet of snow coming through.
Yeah.
And then this week it was Argentina and Chile getting bombed again.
Yeah, New Zealand was before that, remember? That was, they were getting pounded.
I think it was that same kind of storm that kind of went through both, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and I guess they had South America has to kind of a lousy start to the season. They were like, oh, I don't know if it's going to, they were opening kind of late and things weren't going so great. And then just that 9-footer just dropped on them.
It was like right on opening week, which is pretty good timing for them.
Yeah, they got, okay, so they're saying Barilloche in Argentina, 4 feet of snow in 24 hours.
Wow, so they just got a big snow.
And they're saying even larger storms were hammering places south of the border, Chile, Portillo. 5 to 6 feet. That is a thing of beauty.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
All right, so what do we have next? What's up next?
Well, this was a pretty cool story. This was on Freeskier, Clean Power Plan, preparing for skiing's future. So it talked about, you know, when you hear about climate change and, you know, as skiers, it's kind of a terrifying notion, the fact that things are going to warm up so much where, you know, we can't do the thing we love doing the most. And it goes into talking about this week how President Obama took steps toward thwarting the effect of climate change with the passing of the Clean Power Plan. The plan announced by President Obama and the EPA, who just dumped some crap into the river in Colorado, puts carbon emission standards in a place across the entire country. So it's a three-tiered plan that, in short, establishes national standards that will limit the amount of carbon pollution power plants can produce. Until now, power plants have been permitted to release as much carbon pollution as desired.
It's crazy.
States will have the freedom to develop unique plans to meet these carbon emissions reductions, with the goal being to decrease CO2 emissions by 32% by 2030. So, you know, the plan is, you know, you're reducing the amount of carbon in the air, you're reducing the amount of greenhouse gases. There isn't that kind of, you know, global warming increase and things don't get worse. I guess that's really what they're trying to do, is keep things from getting worse. And it's awesome that America, that we're kind of doing that. But I guess the real concern is, what is the rest of the world doing? The developing nations, China, India, you know, Brazil, all those like kind of, you know, third world countries that are building themselves up, they're the ones who are probably causing more damage than we are anyway.
Well, like we were talking about this before we started the podcast, you know, places like China, I think we saw something on Vice where they actually came out with a statistic that the air pollution in China accounts for, I believe it's about 4,000 deaths a day in China, which is
4,000 deaths a day?
Yes. Isn't that crazy?
That is horrible.
So they're saying it's because nearly 4,400 people every day, if you average it out, is how many deaths in China can be attributed to air pollution.
That's insane. And then they had the Olympics there a couple of years ago, and they said that, you know, the athletes were getting sick and they were, you know, they couldn't breathe the air there.
Yeah. Well, I remember seeing an interview with one of the, I think it was the might have been the mayor of the city or whatever, one of the government officials. They said it was so polluted that they actually came out, and since they're communists, they can tell everybody, you can't drive your cars from this time to this time. Like, so during that whole Olympic time in Beijing, they weren't allowed to drive cars because they needed to get the smog pollution down.
Wow.
That's how bad it was.
That is crazy.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's it goes into that. And then you hear big cities, you know, we talked about something going on with Dubai last week. There's, you know, New York City, we see a lot of green building and a lot of, you know, LEED certification, things like that going on. So it's happening in the developed nations, but the developing nations, it's out of control.
Yeah, and part of it too is, you know, you think of the way, you know, the kind of ebb and flow from cities to suburbs that, you know, different countries in different stages of development go through. So, you know, in the U.S. after World War II, there's a big push to move to the suburbs. More cars were on the road then. People were traveling more. And then now there's kind of a push to be more urban. So there's less cars on the road, less people driving, more people using mass transit. And those developing countries are kind of where U.S. was after World War II. There's a lot more people, you know, finally being able to afford cars and moving out of the cities and getting that space. So, yeah, it seems like It's great that we're doing it, and the U.S. is often looked at as a leader in these fields. But when you have countries with billions of people, with a B, tres comas, billions of people, that's a lot of people causing a lot of pollution. So, and, you know, China and India don't have the record of being the most clean, you know, countries in terms of the way they treat the environment. So,
right.
Well, we're going to do our part here, and we're going to see if the rest of the world is going to follow. So we're doing what we can.
It's kind of the frustrating thing. I know I've argued with friends of mine that were European, and they have the attitude that the U.S. should be the leader, even if it's at the peril of our own industry, where the argument back is, well, why can't everybody else start following, and then we'll follow suit with everybody else? So it's kind of that, do you lead or do you follow? I mean, and then, you know, because it affects your local businesses and your economy, too.
Yeah. But. No doubt. So we're going to do everything that we can at the Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast to keep as much snow on the ground as possible.
Yes, that's our commitment.
We're going to block the sun if we have to.
100% snow commitment.
Yeah, 100% snow commitment. I like that.
Big snow commitment, BSC. all right, so next, we already started talking about this, but South America is getting a ton of snow.
Yeah.
So just under a month ago, Chile and Argentina received some really huge storms, some of the biggest ones that they've gotten in a decade. And then I think Brian just pulled up. Bariloche, Argentina was hit with 4 feet in 24 hours. So that was pretty cool. We do have a link on, I think it was this is Curbed, I think, Ski Curbed. They have some cool pictures from Chile, from Portillo. I guess these were photos that people had submitted in or they grabbed them from Instagram. And there's a ton of really cool photos that people took of just, you know, skiing in incredible powder. They have, like, you know, the town. They have I like the one with the window. They show the windows, and there's basically snow all the way up to the top of the windows.
Yeah, it's the third floor window, and they're pretty much covered at that point.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Third floor.
Third floor. And some of these ski photos are just unbelievable. I mean, just beautiful shots, you know, overlooking the water. I mean, I guess this is the Hotel Portillo. Just, you know, whiteout conditions.
Mm.
It is gorgeous. So, yeah, we'll post these all in the notes for the podcast, and you can check them out and take a look and let us know what you think.
And then the Portillo Power Report. So, 100-plus inches in the last 8 days.
Epic.
That's wild.
Yeah. So, yeah, we definitely made a mistake not going skiing this summer. This was the summer to do it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was.
But then again, El Nino comes rolling in.
That's right.
It could be even better next year.
So I wonder, at what point do we start getting new glaciers, right? So some glaciers are melting. Now we're getting a ton of snow. If it keeps going like that, maybe we'll see some more glaciers pop up.
Would you call that like reglaciering?
Reglaciering. I like that.
That's good, right?
Yeah. It might be shifting from one area to another, but as long as you keep those glaciers, then it's a good sign of maybe the climate isn't changing as much as we think, you know.
And there was that story that we had a few weeks ago with that the one scientist who said there's going to be a mini ice age in 2030.
2030 is coming.
It's coming kind of quickly, yeah.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
That'll be like a Game of Thrones winter.
True, right?
Mini ice age.
I like it.
Better sharpen your skis.
All right, another story that we have is Lake Louise expansion approved amid controversy.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, located in Banff National Park, Lake Louise offers 4,200 skiable acres, making it one of North America's largest ski resorts and the third largest in Canada. The last time it's seen any kind of expansion was a new lift in 2003. Parks Canada approved controversial expansion plans Saturday that could nearly double the daily skier capacity at Lake Louise Ski Resort.
Wow.
It could allow Lake Louise to accommodate up to 11,500 visitors daily, up from 6,000 on every type of terrain over the next decade. Conservationists sent more than 1,200 letters of concern asking the environmental minister to fight for the ecological integrity of the UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's one of those things that, depending on which point of view you have, determines if this is a good thing or a bad thing. As skiers, we're excited that they're expanding. I mean, that's great. I've never been up there. Neither of us have been up there,
I haven't
right?
been up to Banff, no. I know people that have
but
been.
But Rem was up there, right? I think he's been up there and he said it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Just beautiful. My father-in-law's been up there. I think he said it was one of the nicest places he's ever been to, and he's been all over the planet.
I heard it's beautiful in the summer, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
Supposedly they have, like, a lot of spas and...
Just looks gorgeous.
Getaway places.
So, yeah, you know, so we'll see what happens there, but it's...
I guess it depends how you do it. If you just, you know, rake over and start cutting trails without caring, then, yeah, it's going to be bad. But if you do it in a certain way, you can protect the environment to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, it's Canada. They're, you know, they're like just sweetheart angel people. I don't think they're going to do anything that's going to be too bad. They're going to, you know, they're going to maintain the integrity, I think, of the wildlife and the park itself.
Well, that's kind of why it's good that, you know, people are raising the question so mm-hmm. that it pushes them to make sure they take account of that.
See, Canada, they kind of, they understand, they're in touch with nature more than us here, and they're going to do a fine job. It's not like it was happening in friggin' Florida or something. Then we'd have a problem.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
All right, the next story we have is a kind of a, I don't know, sad one. But we're trying to find out more information. So Lindsey Vonn said she broke her ankle while training Thursday in New Zealand. They have her quoted as saying, "Unfortunately, I crashed today. I have a small fracture in my ankle. Headed home now, but we'll keep you posted." So she said that on Twitter, actually. And we don't have any other details. So I guess she must have found out. You know, they must have done an x-ray of some sort.
Well, I'm sure she felt... It must have felt pretty horrible, too, you know, to walk around and get around. So, yeah, that sucks. I mean, she's had such a great comeback season last season to have this. Yeah. But she's so hardcore, man. I mean, you'd think, you know, you're going to take a nice summer off and be a bit of a slacker. Nah, she was down in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Crushing it. And unfortunately, she crashed, yeah.
Ouch. Small fracture in the ankle. So I guess
that can't be good for skiing.
Yeah, I guess maybe the ski twists around and you fracture that ankle or something. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. She goes hard, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So best of luck, Lindsey. Get better soon and hope to see you out there in the very near future.
All right, Brian. So what do we have to talk about now?
Over the hump, man. I mean, you know, we really don't have too much going on. I'm just going to throw it out there. So I've always been a person who hates summer. Like, hate. There was last season, I took a picture of myself in the mirror because there was a sticker that said, "Fuck summer." And I loved it. It made me so happy. This summer, I've been trying to embrace it. You know, I feel like it's like a yin and the yang thing. You know, you have your yin, you have your yang, and you really appreciate winter more if you at least try to enjoy summer. So this past week, I went down the shore, was down the Jersey Shore, and I know a lot of people probably think of the stupid show on MTV as the Jersey Shore. Let me tell you, there are some absolutely epic places down there. Just beautiful, filthy rich, no freaking orange people. It's great. So, trying to enjoy that, trying to, you know.
They're not all tan and fake tan?
No, there are actually some very lovely people down there. So, shout out to all of our pals down in the Seagirt, New Jersey area. Thank you again for a wonderful weekend and hope to be back again. But yeah, there's some great places and some great food. And, you know, there's a definite vibe that, like, beach towns have. You know, not just there, but, you know, California.
Yeah.
Even some parts of Florida. There's just a chillness to it, you know?
Long Island's pretty nice.
So parts of Long Island are great. Yeah, there's a chill vibe that beach towns have.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's almost like a ski town kind of vibe. You know, people a little more laid back, a little more friendly, a little more chill.
Well, it's like somewhere like Outer Banks. It's like you're in a different planet.
Yeah. Why would you be in a bad mood when you're in...
Because that you're actually cut off from like everything too. So it's kind
of... You're in a great place and, you know, there's a lot of harmony in the water. And last weekend there was a tropical storm or a nor'easter that was... I was kind of stuck off the coast down in off Maryland, Baltimore area. So the waves were crazy. Wow. I mean, they wouldn't let people go in that far. Riptide was like just pulling. I mean, you'd stand there, the wave would come in, and your foot would go down about 6 inches into the sand with the pullback of the tide.
Wow.
It was crazy. I've never, I mean, as
you
a kid,
be careful
we used to go.
With that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad. They weren't letting a lot of people go very far out into the water because it was really strong.
Well, between that and sharks.
Sharks.
This is the summer of the shark. I got to say it. I got to call it out.
This is the summer of the shark, yeah.
40th anniversary of Jaws.
Sharknado 3.
Sharknado 3. Sharknado 4 is getting ready to start filming if they haven't started already.
Are they going to Russia for that one?
Yeah, right. It's going to be like at Chernobyl. And then we had, what was the surfer, Nick?
Mick Fanning. Yeah.
We saw that attack, I mean, because it was filmed. And actually, I saw something today. They have Hello to Deep Blue, the biggest shark ever filmed. So I guess a few days ago it came out. I think NBC did something, Discovery Channel did. Like, I was actually trying to see if this was a fake article. I didn't want to be that guy from the...
guy from FIFA?
From FIFA.
Reading the Onion article?
Showing up the Onion article.
Oh, dumbass.
But, you know, I checked, and this is the real deal. I mean, this shark is gigantic. 20-foot-long great white. So, and it's a pregnant... It's a female shark, and it's pregnant with more sharks. So, yeah, that's a lot of shark attacks this year.
They were saying, she was about 50 years old, right?
Yeah.
I wonder how they determined that.
They didn't cut her open to count
they
the
said rings, her birthday so. Card? Yeah. They're checking her birthday card collection. And so she was pregnant at 50.
Yeah.
So how long do sharks live?
I have no idea, but 50 must be pretty long for a shark. I didn't think they lived that long.
She's a dirty freaking... She's like a cougar shark.
She's a cougar shark.
Like a cougar shark.
That's a new type of shark. It's a cougar shark.
Wait a minute. Okay, so this story says that sharks live 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, they're saying...
So how is that shark 50? And how do they know she's 50?
Freaking nature. It's just like somebody that's 101. How do you know?
Are you sure it wasn't 15? All right, here's a different one. Great whites. Whites. Great white sharks live as long as humans, 70 years or more. So there you go. But you don't have 50-year-old ladies getting pregnant.
You never know. I think the oldest woman on record is like, I think she was over 50. Look that up. I think it's 54.
But was she like an in vitro lady, or was she like?
I think she might have done
real deal Holyfield.
I think she
down partying.
I don't know.
Oldest woman to have a baby. Here we go.
I think it was like in Italy or something.
66.
Boom.
Get out of here. Maria del Carmen Posuada de Lara is the oldest verified mother. She was aged 66 years. 358 days when she gave birth to twins.
Wow. Twins.
Twins.
Was that in vitro or was that natural? Had to be.
In both cases, the children were conceived through IVF with donor eggs.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy, though.
I think the human body, I think women go through that, in their mid to late 40s or something?
It's your early 50s. Yeah, late 40s, early 50s, yeah.
It depends on the person sometimes.
Neither of us are gynecologists, so we're just making stuff up at this point.
I'm not an expert.
Amateur gynecologist. Ew. Got the t-shirt.
I got a set of tools.
Hey, set of tools over here.
So there's been a lot of shark attacks this summer, right? Well, what have you been doing this summer? You've been running, right?
Trying to
run?
Yeah.
You got a half marathon coming?
Half marathon. 6 weeks from Saturday.
Nice.
So tomorrow, actually. So yeah, it's going to be... I'm excited. I'm also... Not really scared. I'm more excited than anything else. Because I know when that's done, I know that snowmaking in Vermont starts 5 days later. 4 days later, actually.
Wow.
So,
nice.
So I know I can kind of keep that in focus and, you know, kind of have that. You get this done almost ski season.
Almost ski season.
Almost ski season.
More almost ski.
Because now it's almost ski season.
It's coming.
But then it's more almost.
That's right.
More almost.
Yeah, with this nice weather, I've been doing a lot of bike riding. So I got a.
You've been crushing it, haven't you?
Yeah, I did 100 miles last week, and just for the week. So I've been trying to step it up, doing a lot of hills. We have a big ride next month where we do a lot of hills, and my team and I were trying to. My Captain Lawrence team, we're trying to crush it and
shout out
to Captain Lawrence, CL,
for New York. Big up,
big up. So we're trying to ride hard for them, and. We're trying to take a King of the Mountain in one of our rides.
King of the Mountain.
King of the Mountain. It doesn't mean anything other than bragging rights. So.
Do you get a crown?
We actually get a jersey.
Ooh.
We will get a polka dot jersey for the King of the Mountain.
Ooh.
Very nice. That's
polka
one.
Polka dot.
If anybody watches the Tour de France, it's the, you know, the polka dot jersey. I love that. That's like baller. That means you're the better climber, you know.
You are the king.
You're the king. So I've been doing that. Been doing a lot of... I actually have a 65 miler this Sunday, so...
Damn.
That should be pretty good.
Nice.
65's not bad. When you start hitting 100...
I hate driving 65 miles.
I don't mind it on the
cycling?
Bike. On driving, I still don't like driving that far.
Do you listen to music when you ride?
No.
No?
I listen to the world around me, nature.
Just kind of embrace the zen...
Exactly.
...nature.
Well, and we're also flying down the highway.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, speakers drafting would be a bad thing. And...
It's kind of like if you've ever tried drafting with a bike, it's probably one of the most terrifying things when you start doing it.
Really?
Because if that person puts their brakes on, you're crashing into them.
So it's pretty much like tailgating. But without the benefit of having like 4,000 pounds of metal and glass around you.
Right.
To protect you.
Crashing on, would not be good. Let's put that
way. Have you ever had any bad like wipeouts?
Thank God, no. Knock on wood.
Knocking.
Don't want any of those. You pretty much break a lot. Or scrape stuff.
It kind of looks that way, yeah. Because they showed like the Tour de France, like, what those crashes they had there, where it was like 40, 50 people just barreling into each other. And was the one bike that was flying over everybody else.
Well, you notice those guys are in such a tight pack. One guy goes down, and it's like now 10 people automatically going to get taken out. And then if another person goes down as a result, now it takes out another, bunch of people. So those crashes get pretty crazy.
Yeah, they get pretty nasty. Is there a women's Tour de France?
No, but there should be. I've been thinking
it's
about
sexist.
That. Well, you know what it is? They in the U.S. there's a big push now for like women to bike ride, which is great. You see some of these really good women teams out. I actually think I don't know if it's a women's tour of France, but there are some major women's tours that they do now.
Oh, nice.
Which is good to see.
More blood doping for the ladies, or is that a?
Unfortunately, I'm sure it's throughout the whole, the whole sport.
Get your EPO on, right?
Get the EPO on. So EPO, let's talk about that. I saw a show.
What does EPO stand for exactly?
I don't know what the.
Do we know?
No.
We can look it up.
We can look it up. But I saw a. It was on Netflix. It's called Pantani, and it details. It's a story about Pantani, who was a bike rider in the Tour de France. Really good bike rider. And in that, they talk about EPO doping and how it got popular in the sport. And they said when it first hit, there were a lot of, I guess, the Dutch were actually doing a lot of doping, using EPO to start. And they were using such high amounts of it that their hearts were seizing up at night. So they had a few deaths, and then they put a rule in where they could check your blood health, but they really can't detect EPO in your body. So what they do is they look for the number of blood cells, and if it's over like 150% of normal, they make you like take a time out for like 15 days. You can't compete. So it screws up if you're in a big ride, if you're in a big tour, multi-day tour. Now your tour is done. You might miss some other tours or whatever. So, nobody wants to get caught. But they said it got so bad that what they'll do is they set up a stationary trainer in the room. And they wear a heart rate monitor with an alarm. So when the heart rate would drop below a certain rate, they would get up and get on the stationary bike and pedal so that their heart wouldn't stop beating because of the EPO.
That's so crazy.
It's just nuts because you have so many red blood cells in your body that it's stopping your heart from pumping. It's nuts. Absolutely
nuts. Yeah, that's madness.
So I don't know who would ever do that. It's just...
People who want to win.
That's true. I guess...
Not a bunch of goddamn certificate of participation.
That's true.
Ribbon wearing, winning douchebags that were becoming this country. These are people who want to win.
See how it starts is, well, if we just do a little bit of it, it's not so bad.
It's going to be okay.
And then you got to up a little, and then you up a little.
So
soon you're waking up at 2 in the morning to get on a stationary bike after riding.
So you don't die.
After riding 120 miles during the day.
Jesus. So EPO is erythropoietin. Oh my God, I totally butchered that. Is a glycoprotein hormone produced by the interstitial fibroblasts that signal for erythropoiesis in bone marrow.
All right.
You've learned nothing from what I just said. I know. The increased activity of a hemocytoblast allows the blood to have a greater carrying capacity for oxygen. EPO was first developed to counteract the effects of chemotherapy and radiation therapy for cancer patients. EPO also stimulates increased wound healing. The psychological side effect of EPO, particularly increased hematocrit, has become a potential drug to abuse by professional and amateur cyclists.
Wow.
I don't know what any of that meant. But yeah, it's crazy what people will do. I mean, it's crazy in cycling too. It seems like everybody is cheating.
They're trying to get in it. Well, because it's just humanly impossible to do it at the speeds they're doing it. I just think it's just like, they're incredible athletes. They're in such great shape, but it's just like freakish the way these guys go. They actually, I do this, there's an app for cycling called Strava. So a lot of bikers do it, cyclists do it. And, it's kind of cool. You could compare your ride to your friends, and they have little challenges where you can beat other people for the day or for the year. It's kind of neat.
Oh, nice.
But they actually had an article where they showed some of the Strava rides from some of the pro athletes. And there were these crazy statistics, like, you know, how many calories did they burn up in a ride? Like 6,000 calories. And, you know, this one guy had his heart rate. He did 110 miles, and his heart rate didn't go above 150-something beats. It's like freakish. These guys are just freaks.
And then the one thing, too, is I guess you really need to figure out what is cheating and what is just normal. Because think about it. If you really took a look and you're like, oh, well, that guy trains. He goes to the gym. He works out. He lifts weights. That's cheating. It's like, well, yeah. He doesn't eat cheeseburgers, you know, and
or that's vitamins, cheating. Right? Vitamins,
yeah,
supplements.
It's tough to draw that line. You know, what is cheating? What is not cheating? What is just, you know, training? But yeah, I guess if everybody's cheating, then isn't that just the way then?
It's that's the whole Lance Armstrong argument.
Yeah.
You know, I actually looked when they suspended him for the 7 years. They took him out of the winning. You know, strike him from the record book as the winner of the Tour de France. If you take him, you take anybody that's been officially caught for doping, out of 15 years, there was only one actual winner, and that guy admitted to doping, but they let him keep the title.
Wow. Wasn't it like, too, the 1 year, I think it was like the 17th place person was now the winner because everybody at the top 16, they're all.
That was, I'm trying to think what year, because I remember I started watching the Tour de France back then, and I was like, oh, crap. It was like they disqualified like two or three teams, like entire teams they were disqualifying. It was crazy. But that's why, like, if you look at, you know, there are a lot of people that are, you know, pro riders were implicated. It's incredible. But I like doing it for exercise and little bragging rights. And
spandex.
Spandex. Mandex.
Who doesn't love wearing spandex?
Right? Mandex, baby.
I feel like a real goddamn man.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, so I guess that's pretty much, you know, we just wanted to talk about, you know, summary. We didn't have a real topic. We're kind of winging this one. I think we're doing a pretty good job, actually.
Winging it good.
Winging it very good.
See, I don't mind summer, though, so I'll do my bike ride, and I haven't gone to the beach a lot, though.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a pool, like, 2 weeks ago, sitting on an inflatable raft with a margarita.
Yeah.
And I learned that, having kind of the pasty complexion that I do, that suntan lotion must always be applied before margaritas start being consumed.
Ooh.
Because I got a little bit toasty. Nice. But the margaritas were good.
See, I go out for like, I'll go out like 2 hours at a clip, and I won't use any suntan lotion. I'll just, you know, tan a little, and then I go back in.
Yeah, but you can do that. I can't.
Yeah, I walk out to the pool, just do that, and then come back.
But yeah, it's been a pretty good, I mean, the weather's been, in this area, has been great this summer. It's been, you know, it's been hot, but it hasn't been that oppressive 100 and something degrees humidity for like 3 weeks straight we had a couple years ago.
I think there's only been like one or two days that's been like above 95, right?
If that, yeah. Maybe that. Yeah, maybe one or two. Yeah, it hasn't been too bad, so we've been pretty lucky. But yeah, about this week I started noticing it's starting to get darker earlier. Yeah. It's getting a little bit crisp, the air at night. It's
a little
starting
cooler
to have that,
a breeze coming through.
It's having that feeling, you know, that this is a... You know, if you had the little egg timer for summer, there's not a whole lot of sand left in the top part. It's slowly dripping away.
It's going to almost get ready for me to start looking at the new recipe for Jaeger tea. And I know you make
Jaeger
the punch,
tea.
So you make the Glühwein.
Yeah,
so.
Glühwein and Jaeger tea, those are the 1-2 punch from the Alps, bringing it here.
Yeah.
Kuhstall West.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting to be that time.
I made a good Jaeger tea last year.
That was really good.
I got to make a bigger batch this year because that was pretty popular.
You should make it in the bathtub.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
Bathtub Jaeger tea.
I wouldn't even drink it then.
Come on. It'd be delicious.
Well, I like, you know, I realized last year, too, it's like a good little gift to bring to people. I brought it to somebody's house, and they were like, oh, this is great. And they had some. They were like, oh, we love it.
Oh, it's fantastic. And for those who aren't in the know, we'll go over that in a couple of podcasts. We'll do a little après-ski thing as we get closer to the season starting up.
Yeah, different drinks.
Yeah, kind of good, fun, delicious après-drinks. A lot of different regions have their own kind of specialty drink, which is kind of cool. So you go somewhere new, you try something different there, and you bring it back home with you, and you make it yourself, and you share it with your friends, and the legend begins. Kind of like the Moscow Mule.
Yeah.
That's like a thing this year. You know, it's...
The mules.
It's an old drink that was brought back, and now it's all popular, and you got people stealing copper cups all over the place from bars.
Like, it's a good après-ski drink, but tons of people love them in the summer because they're refreshing.
Big summer drink, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not your... your syrupy, crappy, you know, drink.
Captain and Coke. Yeah.
You're going to sit out in the heat and drink. It's a nice and refreshing, you know. It's good for your stomach, too.
It is delicious. Yeah, the ginger. Ginger beer, yeah. So I guess that's all we kind of have for the our faux topic.
All right, so the Foo Fighters this summer. That was good.
I think you already talked about that, didn't you?
Oh, I keep talking about it. It was awesome.
The Foo coming through.
I love that damn concert.
Yeah, it was kind
of
awesome.
I got to look for another concert or something.
Yeah, I saw Faith No More last week. I think we might have mentioned it last week. They were fantastic. Lots of energy. Good people. Cool. Good times. They rocked. So, yeah, so if you guys want to check out all this stuff we've been talking about, we'll post some notes. Not that we're going to post notes about all this nonsense we were just blabbering about, but all the good stuff from Ski News. Check it out, SkiBumPodcast.com. Hit us up on Twitter at SkiBumPodcast, Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast, or send us an email at SkiBumPodcast@gmail.com.
Send us the love.
Send us the love.
Or the hate. That's fine. We want to hear both.
Yeah, please. We need that. You know, balance is good. Yin and yang, you know?
Oh, you know what time that is?
Oh, it's the around the horn time.
Lightning around the horn. Mm.
Right, so, again, we got another. It's crazy. When we do these around the horns, we always feel like, oh, last week was the best we ever were going to have. But there's always so much new crazy shit we find.
There's a lot of crazy. The world is a crazy place.
A lot of crazy bastards. So, first off this week, this is from motherboard.vice.com. This man has been trying to live life as a goat. Yes, G-O-A-T.
What the hell, man? I looked at this and I was like, I thought it was a spoof thing.
The
but
pictures are priceless. Really doing it. So this gentleman, Thomas Thwaites, is currently investigating what it might be like to live as a goat. He commissioned prosthetics for his arms and legs so that he could walk as comfortably as possible on all fours.
That is crazy.
He considered constructing an artificial rumen that would digest grass for him to consume using actual gut bacteria found in goats.
He really wants to go there.
Yes, he consulted with behavioral expert on goats and even watched as a goat was dissected to learn more about the animal he wanted to be.
This is weird.
The best part is that Thwaites is also arranged to live as a goat for a few days on a goat farm in the Swiss Alps amongst actual grazing goats.
Wow.
So these pictures really have to be seen to be understood. I mean, he has this like weird like a speed cycling helmet.
It's a racing cycling helmet.
It's like a racing cycling helmet, and then he has these weird like prosthetics on his arm so he can kind of walk on all fours. And some of these pictures, you see these goats looking at him like, what is this asshole doing?
The best is the one I'm on the floor face down.
One where he must have fallen, and it's just him kind of on his elbows and his knees with his face in the grass.
You know what that is? That's sexy goat time right there.
I don't even want to know what the alpha ram did to him in that pose.
That's why they call it a ram.
Oh, hey-o. But these pictures, like, you have to check it out. Go to Ski Bum Podcast. You have to see these pictures. They are hysterical. And like, is one of them actually eating grass?
Yeah. I just want to know, like, what's his is this his fascination, or he's really trying to study, like for science? Like, it seems like he's doing it scientifically, but he's, like, a freak.
Is he a big Jim Brewer fan? Like, Goat Boy? Like, I don't know.
That's crazy.
Right. He traveled for 3 days. Wait, he traveled with the goats for 3 days and spent another three as a solitary goat.
As a solitary goat.
Like, what? Like, how does this happen?
It is weird.
I don't know. God bless him. To each his own. So.
You want to be a goat? You go right ahead, be a goat.
Yeah, seriously. Good for him. If you're going to be a goat, be the best goat you can be.
That he's actually trying. So
he is.
All right, next we got double size your burrito at Chipotle.
Oh, so, another near and dear topic to us.
This is a Chipotle hack, which is nice.
Yeah, because a few weeks ago we had the story about the guy who ate Chipotle for, what, 130 days in a row or something?
He's still going, I think.
Still right? Going strong.
He might still be going. We should check up.
We should combine this guy with this guy.
Oh, a goat eating Chipotle for 150 days.
A goat eating Chipotle.
A goat man eating Chipotle.
Do they have grass burritos?
That could be one of the hacks.
Grass-a-rito.
Grass-a-rito. Just put salad in.
Salad, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so double size of your burrito. So this guy found a surefire way to double the size of his burrito. And he did it
because
by...
Because Chipotle burritos aren't really big enough.
Yeah, they're enormous, but like maybe you want to just get more
enormous. They're really enormous. More tapas, you know, if you think about it. They're very small and finger foody.
But we're American. We eat big. That's what we do.
You consume God mass. Goddamn right we are.
We consume mass quantities.
Chuck Norris didn't kick the rest of the world's ass for nothing for us to be eating normal-sized burritos.
America, man. We could eat the biggest burrito we want.
Goddamn right.
So he did it. The way he did the increase was... just by asking for different, for them to prepare it different ways. So he comes out, so I'll just start with some of the suggestions. He says, first ask for a burrito bowl and a side of two tortillas. He says, that alone will increase the size of your portions by 15%. Right? Of course, you got to roll your own burrito at that point. And then he said, ask for half of everything. So ask for like half and half of your meats. So like ask for half chicken, half steak, and they wind up giving you a little bit extra because they don't do like just a small, tiny portion half.
There isn't usually like two different sized spoons where they kind of dole it out with, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's just conceptually when they're making them, they'll give you more because... So it was kind of weird. Like a lot of it's based on the fact that they're not going to measure it out as well and they're just going to give you a little bit extra. So I guess if you want a really big burrito... this is what he did, and he's like, and then you have everything you need to roll your own burrito at the table, which is just kind of weird, too. But for some people, if you want a big burrito, you want to eat big.
I mean, there's got to be at least 12% of people who go to Chipotle and leave starving.
Probably not. Maybe if they only eat the salad.
I wonder, what the record is for the most Chipotle burritos eaten in one sitting?
Ooh, they probably have a contest. I was at Moe's the other day, and they have a taco eating contest.
Really?
Yes.
Is it like timed or for quantity?
I don't know, but I could eat a lot of tacos.
Yeah. Tacos are nice and easy, but like burritos, though, it's like eating a newborn baby.
Yeah, it's very compact. They have us on Food Network. They have this one place. It's like a gigantic burrito. And if you eat the whole thing, you get it free. Mm-hmm. And they were saying it was, I forgot what the size was, but it was bigger than the average newborn baby.
People are fucking gross. This guy ate four Chipotle burritos in 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
3 minutes.
That's not even chewing. That's just like shoving it down the gullet.
Oh, that is so gross.
I knew somebody that ate very fast like that. Actually, you know somebody that ate. He used to when he was really big.
Oh, yeah?
He used to inhale. I remember going to McDonald's one morning, stopping when I was working construction, and I was just unwrapping my bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, and he had already eaten one bacon, egg, and cheese, and was already eating the second one. I was like, I thought he actually put it down. I didn't think he ate it. He ate it that fast.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Wow. 3 minutes. A 21-year-old Matt Stoney. Apparently he's a competitive eater, so he just kind of does this. Two chicken, two steak burritos, and washed all down with a Diet Coke in 3 goddamn minutes. That is so weird.
That is very weird.
Ugh, yeah. So there you go. So, you know, that guy could probably get a better deal if he did this little, doubling your... What's beeping over there?
Stupid beeping thing.
Burritos.
Burritos beeping. Every time a burrito gets eaten, you hear that bell. Bing, 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 bing.
All right. So enough of the burritos.
On other news for Chipotle, two men have eaten Chipotle for over 100 days straight, and then the Chipotle fan... is still not stopping. 153 days.
Wow. He's on a roll.
He's on a roll. He's not stopping.
Good for him. All right, next up. So this is a cool story I saw on Fastco Exist. It's Fast Company. This new student-designed super-resilient home is the beach house of the flooded future. So what it is these students, about 60 students in Hoboken, created this resilient house that's designed to withstand the next Hurricane Sandy-like storm, and even supply power to its neighbors in a disaster. When they are done, they'll send it to Seaside Park, New Jersey, and it will serve as a resilience education center. So you got to check out the article and look at the pictures here. So I've actually seen them working on this, and I was like, what is going on over there? Because it's in Hoboken now, right on the waterfront in a parking lot. They're building this. And it's got a bunch of really nifty features to it. So this is, it's built to withstand... 5 feet of storm floods and 130 miles per hour in winds.
That's really cool.
It's inspired by some elements of boat design. The resilience starts in the overall structure and is evident in many details. In a storm, for example, a huge multipurpose shutters can be pulled down over the wall-sized windows to protect from waters and winds. During normal times, the shutters can be opened onto a supporting frame that creates a shaded, energy-saving porch. The porch, made from PVC and bamboo composite, looks like wood, but is much better at withstanding water and salt water air corrosion. So, yeah, it's cool. They're using a lot of boat building features to create this house.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And then I think there's some...
Our friends at Stevens. Yeah. I'm a Stevens alum.
Yeah, it's a great school. And I was... For those who aren't familiar with the area, so Stevens Institute of Technology is a technical school in Hoboken, and where it's located is located on top of the hill, pretty much, I don't know if it's considered the Palisades. I mean, they must have how many acres? I don't know, 40 acres?
It's a great site, yeah.
Of land on this cliff overlooking New York City. I mean, that's got to be worth billions of dollars, the real estate at that school. And it's actually a great school. They have a bunch of great programs there, a lot of good engineering. They've got a lot of cool tech scene there. They have the NJ Tech meetups there monthly. Great place, and they're doing a lot of really good work. And it's cool seeing them do this, you know, after Sandy hit, creating these projects which are going to be, you know, sustainable for citizens down the road.
And it's not even just Sandy. I mean, think about it. They could put this on, you know, Tropical Island where they have a lot of hurricanes and things. It'll help that whole technology.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff.
Neat stuff. All right, so next we have Tom Brady courtroom sketch.
Deflated balls again.
Deflated balls. He's going back into court, trying to appeal his suspension, which he should just shut up and take.
Yeah.
And as a result now, nothing came out of the proceedings, but it did get to produce an awful courtroom sketch of Brady. So if you've seen the news lately, everybody's talking about it because it looks like a really, like, gruesome, horrible sketch of a person, you know, of some crazy looking person. So I'm glad it happened to him. He was in New York, and that's why it happened, because he's in New York.
And there's apparently no news going on anywhere in the world, so yeah. There's plenty of time to you know, focus on this. And some of these, like the meme, like some of these like photos they photoshopped, are like the ET one.
The ET one is
so funny. Is they took the sketch of Tom Brady and put it in, you know, when ET is in Elliot's the bucket on his bike. The Tom Brady face is perfect for that's the ET in there.
Awesome.
And the Picasso painting. It's really funny.
That's it was like something from The Scream. It was pretty funny.
It's good. I mean, no, it's Picasso.
I'm saying like the actual sketch looked like it was Edward Monk.
It does. You know what? It does look a bit like him, yeah.
It's like all distorted like that. It's really creepy and crazy looking.
I mean, the sketch artist is obviously like talented. You know, she's good, but the way she made him look, it's almost like he looks evil or possessed or something.
That would be a good mask to get for Halloween. The Tom Brady sketch face.
Oh, Tom Brady sketch face.
That's how gruesome it looks.
Yeah, I like that.
Maybe I'll try that this year. I did Aaron Hernandez the 1 year.
Yeah.
Maybe I could do Tom Brady sketch face. Sketch face Brady.
And I'll go as Vince Wilfork.
Oh,
just be like five. I'll start eating. It's like 500 pounds.
There's more to that, which we've talked about off camera.
Oh, yes, we have. We'll have to get good and liquored up for one of these podcasts and just.
We're going to have to call our friend Cody.
Cody! CP! All right, so next up. So this is a big shout out to one of our friends, Oinkin Moo Barbecue. I don't know if you guys are familiar. If you're in the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia area, you may have encountered them.
Chances are you've seen them or heard about them.
Yeah, they are a food truck, and they have a shop in Florham Park, New Jersey, which is in Morris County. They have they're affiliated with a bar down in Philadelphia, and they just do, I mean, they're all over the place doing the food truck thing. They got ranked number 6 best food truck in America for 2015.
That's great.
Yeah, and you know, I've done some work with them. Josh, the owner, he's a hard worker. He's a great chef. Their food is dynamite. Mario, we've had it a bunch of times.
Yes.
Their sliders, their tacos, their ribs, their chili, everything is awesome there.
We've been with them from their infancy.
Yeah.
You can actually see a little bit of design work from some famous person that we know.
Well, yes. Infamous. Yeah, I actually did the logo, the design, the website for the truck. So I'm particularly proud of Josh and the crew for the awesome job they've done. It was fun to work with them, and they're great people, and they're doing an awesome job, and they're crushing it. And even if you're not in the New York, New Jersey, Philly area, the way they're blowing up, you may see them in your neck of the woods in the very near future.
It's good barbecue. I tell you what,
awesome.
I love their food. I usually wind up getting two, because I don't have them that much. I think I went with you. I got like two meals,
right?
Two meals.
Yeah.
And I ate it, and I was like full and like sick after that, but I was like, it was so good.
The brisket sliders are out of this world.
Mm.
They're so good. And if you go to the real stores, the shops, or sometimes on the truck, it's a special. They have the skirt steak tacos.
Sounds
dynamite. Cool. They're so good. Like, I love skirt steak. They just absolutely crush it. So oinkandmoobarbecue.com. Check out the website. They kick ass. If you go to the stores, say hi to Josh. He's great. And just everything they make is delicious. So congratulations to them again.
Yeah, congratulations. Those guys are great. Next we got Bill Gates drank water made from human feces. As I drink my water, I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound too good. But
feces infused vodka. I mean, considering that Pinnacle, every other flavor they have now.
Yes, they could have feces vodka.
It's only a matter of time.
Just a matter of time. Actually, how do you know there's not feces already in there?
Maybe it's why it's so good.
I'm just saying. So it's the Janicki Omni Processor, JOP. And it actually takes human waste, turns it into drinking water, electricity, and ash. So it's in Africa now.
Senegal, yep.
Senegal.
Dakar, Senegal.
And it's part of a pilot project that, you know, it's a funny tagline, but when you read the article, you're like, wow, this is a real serious, real deal thing. And there's a video of it, and that's where Bill Gates is drinking the water that came out of it. And they said it could save lives, reduce disease in poor communities, and help provide, you know, resources by basically recycling feces, you know. It was really interesting, and there's a lot of other countries that could use this. I know India, probably parts of China, you know, where they're not as urbanized, you know. They're very rural, and they have some of these issues.
Yeah, but a lot of that's cultural, though. I mean, that's the problem in India, is there's so much of that culture of just, you know, crapping in the streets.
Got to go outside. That's do it in nature.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Reading this article, it's crazy. It says, today, at least 2 billion people use latrines that aren't properly drained, and diseases caused by poor sanitation kill some 700,000 children every year.
Wow. Well, they say in there, one of the problems is the manual dumping of these latrines.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it by, you know, mechanical means, it's a little safer because you're not touching it. You know, you're not directly handling a lot of it. But they say the manual emptying of it, they showed these people emptying on the video, and I was just like, oh my God. And they're saying that it's just spreading so much disease that they have to put a stop to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? It's one of those things you really take for granted being an American, just how, you know, lucky we are to live in this society that, you know, has this sort of, you know, sewage containment system down pat, you know?
Sewer system, yeah. Some of these countries, they don't have a sewer system, so that's why, you know, you get things like that.
Yeah, and we didn't build it, you know? I couldn't make a sewage system or a toilet, but, you know, luckily someone else did, and it's, you know, we've been benefiting from it from all these years, but, you know, you lose that, you know, genetic roll of the dice, and you wake up, you know, you were born in Senegal. It's a different world.
But they actually say the byproducts of it, now you get clean drinking water, you get ash, which they make bricks out of for building, and it generates electricity. They're like, it's actually a profitable way to handle the sewage. So now it's like, it's not just sewer treatment where you think, okay, we have to spend so much money to keep our people safe and reprocess this. It's actually a way to actually make more money from it. So that's why it's so cool, this thing, because it's turning it to a different level where people can make a profit off of.
So now, was there actually any waste still, or did they get to use it all for something?
They're using all. That's the ash.
So now, what if Chipotle opened up in Senegal now?
Oh,
people would be taking bigger dumps.
That's right.
More water, more bricks.
Bigger bricks.
Bigger bricks. Bigger houses.
Yes. Skyscrapers. Made out of ash from the duty.
Duty ash.
This foundation was a foundation of duty.
Chipotle duty ash.
Duty ash.
No, but that's a fantastic story. It's so cool, like, seeing someone like Bill Gates, who was just like a, you know, kind of a prick, and, you know, back in the day in the whole like Pirates of Silicon Valley era, now taking his wealth and, you know, doing all these great projects for people all over the world.
It's like really seeing cool. them where they do the technology. Like they're using technology for good, not for evil. Like it's
awesome. Yeah.
You know.
It's great to see. So yeah, again, we'll have this all on the website.
Use technology for that and for making a person into a goat.
There you go. See. All right, another story that we saw this week, and this one it's kind of hard to describe. This is really one that you really need to just check out the photos. On the Atlantic, on their website, they were showing photos of La Paz, Bolivia, which is a steep, very dense, very congested town in the mountains, again, in Bolivia. And they really, it's not possible to have any sort of normal public transportation, trains, you know, the narrow streets there.
So mountainous too, right?
Very mountainous, very steep. So they actually have these series of like an aerial tram system up there. You know, three urban ropeways stretching over 10 kilometers. And it's their regular, like, ski resort gondolas that you would see. And to see the different environment, I mean, this city is so congested and so crowded. And it's, you know, it's in the mountains, so there's no trees. It's very barren. But the views are unreal. I mean, you have the mountains in the background.
Tons
you have
mountains.
All these, you know, the tram lines, the ropes up there. It's fascinating. They're really, really cool photos. And yeah, these, you know, the trams are using just like the ones you'd see at Telluride or Whistler or anywhere. They're the same gondolas.
It's funny, when I first looked at the first picture they have on their site, I almost thought like all the buildings, because it's from far away, I thought they weren't buildings. I thought there was rocks, and I was like, oh, it's a rocky area. And I was like, oh no, that's like, those are buildings sprawled out in the whole valley. It's strange.
Yeah, it's crazy because when you look at the photo, it's tough to tell where the city ends and the mountains begin in the background, because it all has that same look and contour and texture to it.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And then they show a view from the top and from the bottom. The top is, they have these, you know, big, beautiful homes up there with grass, and the gondolas are just kind of cruising over there.
They have the one gondola going over the person's house.
Right over their house, yeah. Funny. Yeah, these pictures, again, check out the website and you'll get to see them. They're definitely worth checking out. They're really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. All right, and then what else? This is your baby.
This is one more. All right, this is pretty much the last story we have. And again, I don't know how I came across this one, but yes, friends, there is a Ned Flanders themed metal band called Oakley Dokley. The world's first and presumably last Ned Flanders themed metal band, formed last month, so they're still pretty new. The Phoenix-based group were unearthed by Adelaide Street Press, Rip It Up, and pretty much embody everything you could possibly want from a band dedicated to all things Flanderino. They dress like Ned, they talk like Ned, and they are all called, you guessed it, Ned.
I would have to punch each one of those guys in the face.
Oh, these pictures are so funny.
That would just, if they were talking like that the whole day, it would get to the point where I just have to punch them all in the head.
I mean, we're going to play a little bit of their song because it's probably freaking awesome. I didn't even listen to it yet. But there's like Red Ned, Thread Ned, Head Ned, Stead Ned, and Bled Ned. Why not? What are they gonna do? Sue us? They're happy to get the press here. All right, this is I don't know what to think about this so far.
I wouldn't wait. I'm not wasting my time on it.
Well, just want you to know it's out there. All right, now it's picking up.
Ned Flanders, huh?
Ned Flanders themed metal band. All right, that's enough of that. So, you know, they're out there. If you're in the Phoenix, Arizona area and you're not high on meth, you might as well go and check out Oakley Dokley, because I'm sure they're going to tear it up.
They're going to tear something up.
They already are. So I guess that's pretty much all we have this week, huh?
That's it.
Yeah, not bad. So yeah, if you want to check us out, please go to skibumpodcast.com. We have all of our social media links there. You can see all the links to the stories that we had this week. Please, if you can, subscribe to us, to the podcast on iTunes. Rate us there. That would really help us out a bit. And Twitter at skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. So thank you guys so much for listening. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, had a lot of fun, and we're going to get more into more ski stuff. It's coming.
It's getting chilly. So we'll talk to you guys again next week.
All right, guys. Stay high, stay fluting.
See ya.